phrase originally, but we always used it on him. It was one of nature's noblemen.
Yeah.
And it really did fit him totally. And we used it a lot. And boy, so much respect.
You know what? And you know what? I'm gonna.
I'll tell you a little story about.
Yeah, and Jack, what I'm gonna ask is too. I'm gonna write this down here because I think I'm gonna put a little on my website, a little tribute at the beginning of his biography.
Yeah.
Is it okay if I use some quotes from you?
All right, sure.
Okay, go ahead.
But I really have to tell you this little funny thing that Bob used to burn up when I was here by myself and painting and trying to make things go. And he would turn up once in a while. He'd have a color problem with a painting or something like that, and try to help him out, which is very tough when you got color blindness to deal with. And I don't know if you know about the time that Elizabeth had done her usual thing, laying out the colors on the palette, labeling them and so on. But she came home one afternoon after work at the bank, and he was busy painting a mallard duck drake with an orange head. And he really could not tell the difference between orange and green. It just, you know, wasn't with him. But it was one of those little crazy events that is part of that kind of situation. But he took it all in very good faith and good humor. And as a matter of fact, if you nagged him enough, he would bring it out of a closet and show it to you.
Oh, he still had that?
He still had it. He wouldn't give it up. You know, it was one of those landmark experiences that he just carried on with. The other thing about Bob was, as I say, he would show up once in a while over here with a color problem or something of that sort, until Jessica showed up. And Bob really was in love with Jessica. I'm convinced of it, because suddenly it was a daily occurrence, sometimes twice. He would turn up. He was so charmed by her. It was so different than anybody he'd ever met, I think, is what happened. And, it's a thing that I'm used to seeing happen. So many people react to her just that way. But it was especially notable with Bob. He was so, so open and forthright that if he was trying to hide it, it was hopeless. He couldn't do it. It was pretty obvious why he turned up so often. And we just got such a kick out of it.
I can remember showing up at the house one day, and I didn't know it, but there was some people that had, a man had just been there before, and Elizabeth wouldn't come out and visit with us, and Marilee was with me, and he had just had hatched these macaw babies, and they were in that incubator, and he was feeding them. He had to feed them every 3 hours, and they were so ugly that only a mother would love them.
Yeah, they were terrible.
And she was in the kitchen, and she wouldn't come out, which was really not typical for her. And she was clanging pans and back and forth and all this. And well, what we'd found out was there was this guy that Bob didn't like the way he had a bird collection. And I don't know where he was from. He wasn't that fellow from Ennis that was the airlines pilot, because they were friends. But he had wanted one of those chicks, and he had offered all of them, and he had offered Bob like $3,000 a piece for them, and it was enough for them to have made it through the winter, easily.
Sure.
And Bob turned him down.
I'm not surprised.
Him and his birds,
Yep, that's right.
And Elizabeth was just beside herself.
Yeah.
What else do you remember about Bob? What's some of your favorite memories?
Well, one of the favorites was when Jessica first came here. And I had talked about her endlessly when I was over having dinner with him or just visiting or whatever. She was number one item on my subject of conversation and impatient for her to be here and so on. Well, she finally showed up, and we went over to the Elgis's. Because I wanted there to meet them as soon as possible. And matter of fact, they had been a trip, and she was just out here visiting, I think, because it was in the spring. The Boulder River was running like crazy. and there were a whole bunch of people over there helping him sandbag the area to keep it all from being flooded out. And, you know, everybody was just going like mad. Elizabeth is in the kitchen. She's cooking up a storm because you got to feed all these people. And it was as if there was nothing going on. She so calmly met Jessica, chatted with her while she was stirring the pots and so on. But she was totally unperturbed by the whole thing. And Bob joined us and chatted a bit while those other people were out doing their thing. But they were just totally, totally welcoming, you know.
Can you comment for me? I guess comment for me about his artwork.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the thing to say about Bob and his artwork is that, you know, here's a guy who was gifted one time at Christmas with a paint-by-numbers set. And he went through a couple of them, I guess, by the time he got really interested and took it on himself to go and buy one or two for himself. And then decided, why can't I do this for myself, you know? So he started in, and he had a pretty fair drawing capability. He would really have the most accurate depiction of a given species. And he was just right all the way up and down the line. And he learned, because of his limitation in color perception, that he had to keep things very, very simple color-wise. So he did tend to be kind of monochromatic, except in the handling of the bird itself, in which case he would be very cautious and well-informed about what color goes where he needed that kind of help. But the thing was that he was so totally conscientious about it that, you know, he was just determined to get those birds just right. And he always placed them in a very believable situation, whatever the nature of the background was, the terrain and so forth, was always exactly right. But he never knew how to handle reflections in the water. So that, he had to get right about that quite a few times. But, the thing is, I've never met an artist, and if you want to categorize Bob as an artist, and he certainly can in that particular area, but with such integrity of his approach to the thing, he was absolutely a master of species identification and so forth, and all the little features of the bird anatomically and pretty much in behavioral patterns too. So he really had the whole thing going in that department. Probably a lot better than some of the people who are more widely recognized as bird artists. He was exceptional.
Oh, there was times, you know, but of course, you know, you don't have the money to buy them, but he did some beautiful pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And then I've seen, you know, his some early ones, but like all artists, they're terrible pieces, you know. And
yeah.
He just, and those parrots.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Oh, there was something else, weren't they?
Oh.
When you go in that back room where they were all stowed in, you know, in their cages. And the remarkable thing, Gary, was that so often they would pick the locks. Those birds were incredible. They were so intelligent. And they would get out of the cages. He'd have them locked up, and they'd, by God, figure a way to get out of them. And, you know, the strength of the beak that they had, you wouldn't be one bit surprised. They'd just chew their way right through the wires of the cages.
Yeah, it just, you know, well, I first met him in, it's about the first time I think I talked to you, 1979 or 80, when we did the old Classic West Art Auction in Bozeman, and I was the art narrator.
Yeah.
And I remember calling and talking to you, but I mean, yeah, he just had such a cadence to him that I just...
He was so devoted to the subject anyway. I mean, when he went to the research extent on that Anser albopanzelgesi that breed up in the San Francisco area, where they had a, I guess it was their spawning ground or something. But the research was so total name for him at the Smithsonian.
Yeah, the Tule Geese.
Yeah. So.
Well, you know, I don't know if you ever get on the website, but you know, years ago, before we moved from Laurel, I called him one day and I says, "Merrily just made a fresh plate of chocolate chip cookies, and I've got a tape recorder and a large pot of coffee." And he came down and recited for me the whole Tule Geese story.
Oh my! Yeah.
And I've got it down.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, I was so glad I did it because he told the story over and over many times, but I never thought of writing it down, and I was so glad I did.
Oh, that's a pleasure.
You know, so.
Well, do you know about his episode with the
Oh, the emu?
The emus, yeah.
What about it?
Well, I was over chatting with him one day, and just for the hell of it, I said, "Bob, I think what you should get is a couple of ostriches." He just went wild. He said, "No, there's no way. They're dangerous birds. They'll kill you in a drop of a hat. You know, they're very dangerous animals, et cetera, et cetera." But I think it planted an idea in his head. And he and Elizabeth were on a trip down to Florida on some kind of a bird thing. And on their way back, they stopped in St. Louis. And the old boy who ran that St. Louis Zoo was the man we used to see on the Mutual of Omaha animal program on Sundays.
Marlon Perkins.
They were friends, you know, they were old friends. And Bob showed up, came back with an emu. And then he was waiting for the second emu to come out. Be shipped out, and he didn't know, and I guess it's really hard to tell at certain ages what species is, what gender is on a given species, but he was determined that he was going to have a breeding pair, and he realized that part of the procedure on this whole breeding situation with these birds is the courting dance that they do, and so he'd go over to Bob's place in the early morning, and out in the side yard would be the emu and Bob, and he's bobbing up and down and flapping his arms, and the emu was doing the same thing, and he was busy teaching the emu the courting dance. And it was really a riot because Bob, in his way, looked very much like one of those birds.
Yep.
You know, he really had that appearance about him, and it was really a sight to behold. Bob and emu courting.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, there are just, you know, some great, great memories of him. He was so humble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I wish that his farm there, at one time, and several of us had talked about it, instead of shipping the money out for the Ducks Unlimited, we should have put it into an aviary. And I remember, and not to quote him, but old Dick Josephson always fought those ideas, and he didn't want to do that. But that would have been such not a tourist
to
event.
To him, yeah.
Yes. And
we drove by the other day on I-90. For some reason, we come back from Billings. We went all the way to the other exit, you know, west of town. And when you do that, look down and you see the house. And it's looking very, very sad. The back end of it needs paint very badly. And the rest of it, there's a little bit of a mowed lawn. I think some guy bought it and was going to do some restoration and pretty it up a bit. I don't know what his purpose was, what his motivation was, but that was the thing. But evidently that hasn't happened. I've seen the guy on a couple of occasions fairly recently. He doesn't appear to be in very good health. So the whole thing may just go to rack and ruin. Who knows?
Wow.
It's not a great property to have because it is a floodplain situation.
Oh, yeah. Any other comments on Bob that you can think of?
Just we loved him like crazy. We just, you know, there's nothing you could ever be angry at Bob about. He was just one of those sweet kind of people in the nicest sense of that word. But you just can find no fault with him whatsoever.
Yeah, he just... I can remember, you know, I did call Jim Kopel a little while ago, and I can remember when he moved out to Oregon and he got betrayed by that lady out there the first time, and then he got in with that bad stockbroker. He called me one day in tears.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what, Bob, if you want to move back, I'll get people together and we'll drive out there and get you. And then he never did.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got some people that helped him. They're not my most favorite people. I know who they are, but you know, they're there and I'm not, and they're doing
That's right. They're
doing the best they can. You know,
well, I think they took very good care of him, as much as they possibly.
You met Bob and Nancy?
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, everybody is different, and they at least are there for him, and they're there with him right now, and they're the ones that contacted me last night and to let me know. Now, I don't know if his grandchildren, he's got a niece in California, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know where the rest
of them. There's not a lot of family left around here, that's for sure.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. But those people were very good with him, and they brought him back here on one or two visits.
Yep, yeah.
And it was a lot for them to do, because he was certainly in no shape to drive, his sight going bad and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Jack.
Well, thank you for calling.
All right. Well,
I'm not happy with the news necessarily, but we kind of expected it, you know.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jack.
Okay, Gary. Thanks so much for calling. Give my regards to your bride.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.